The Premier League is on a break, but here at FPL Pod, we never are. We take stock of what's gone on so far, reveal our unlimited transfer plans, and discuss how the World Cup could affect our thinking. Hello and welcome to a bonus FPL pod. With the start of the World Cup fast approaching, the Premier League has paused and kind of FPL has too, but not completely because dun dun dun, it's the unlimited transfer window. So myself and my usual partners in FPL crime, Sam Bonfield and Julian Laron, are back with me to discuss it. Before we go any further, Sam, whilst others might be taking a bit of a break, as a member of FPL family, I'm guessing you're not.
FPL never stops. It never stops. Even in the gaps between seasons, it doesn't stop for me. I'm kind of still thinking about what might happen next. But yeah, I must admit, this unlimited transfer window, I am really enjoying it. I'm enjoying the no price changes at the moment. So I've got time to think about what I want to do. Yeah, all good in the FPL family household.
Yeah, I'm enjoying that no price race change thing as well, because I'm one of those people that at midnight, this is really sad, I can't believe I'm admitting this, often before I go to bed, I do just have a little look at who's been transferred in loads, who's been transferred out loads, just in case I'm going to wake up to one of those nasty price hikes. Anyway, Jules, you've got a World Cup to prepare for. You've got a busy few days, a busy few weeks. Are you still thinking FPL?
All the time, always. Because of you two to start with. but like Sam is right, you never stop. You always have in the back of your head, even when you and I clearly are going to focus on the World Cup and the games that we are, the France game, the England games, all of that. And then we still be like, okay, who's doing well? Who's scoring goal? Who's in form? Who's not in form? Who's a bit struggling with confidence maybe, or with tiredness, or you know, whatever from the Premier League that is in Qatar. And I think we need to get ready. I think everybody has to get ready, even if we still have 6 weeks before the Premier League resumes. I think we all have to get ready. A bit like you and Christmas, Kelly, because obviously on November 15th, your tree is up in your house, which, you know, I can't really believe that, like, you know, if Santa sees that, I'm not sure you're going to get presents. It's too early.
Oh, don't you worry. I positioned this perfectly, my Christmas tree in all its glory. I'm not going to see this tree much over the next month, Jules. I get That's back true. Just before Christmas. I'm going to be honest, I don't trust my other half to put the Christmas tree up. I don't want to get home just before Christmas and then have to put it up or have to re-put the tree up. So I've just got it up nice and early, bit of festive spirit before heading off to the sunshine. Anyway, I knew that was coming. I just knew it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Anyway, let's take stock on just where we are in the FPL season. It's not very often that we can normally do this in mid-November. I think quite a few times this season, guys, we've joked about how badly we've all been doing. But let's just take stock, and I'm going to enjoy this moment. These are our points totals. Kelly, 914. That's me, by the way.
914.
Sam, 889. Oh. Yep.
I've beaten you again this week, by the way.
Jules, you're on 881.
Yeah.
Sam, it's been a frustrating start to the season. I feel like you and I, we wildcarded at the same time. We've kind of been in this frustration, this excitement of having new players and then being let down by them all season, kind of together.
We have, yeah. We've definitely been on a journey together this season, Kelly, so far, haven't we? It's been a frustration because I think, you know, we brought in a similar sort of bunch of players when we wildcarded. We both really wanted to go for Darwin Nunez on our wildcard, but the injury to him meant we ended up with different players. You made the right decision on reflection by having Salah in your team. I had Gabriel Jesus thinking the Arsenal fixtures were going to be great and he'd start returning goals. And we just haven't quite seen the highs that we did from Jesus in the early part of the season towards the end of this period of the season. So it's been a little bit frustrating from that point of view. And then you couple that with Foden, who since we brought him in on wildcard got benched three times and then absolutely scored a worldie to make up for it in game week 16. But nonetheless, there were some frustrating decisions made on that wildcard.
Yeah, it's also really important, isn't it, to not get disheartened at this stage. There is still so much of the season to go. One big captain haul, one big bad mistake can kind of change things massively. My Haaland not captaining him really affected me 200,000 places in the world. There's still so much scope to make things up. People shouldn't be disheartened at this stage, Sam, should they?
Absolutely not. I mean, I think for me, there's about 90 points between me and the top 10K, which is nothing when you think about it in terms of, you know, where I am right now. So one good captaincy decision, one well-played triple captainship, one great punt on a differential. You know, if you'd have bought in Tavernier a couple of weeks ago, you'd have flown up the rankings and your point score will be huge right now. So don't panic. It's very, very tight still, tighter than it normally is at this stage in FPL.
Don't panic. That's the message. I know, Jules, you're not panicking. How do you reflect on your opening weeks? I enjoy your managerial style because I feel like you're maybe a bit more experimental than Sam and I. And you have some big highs that come with that, but also probably a few lows as well.
Yeah, it was a slow start. But the last few weeks have been good. I've had green arrows, I think 5 or 6 weeks in a row now, which is good. Especially like me, when you start slowly to try to catch up, like Sam just said, you need to go for it, try to get that differential that will get you up the rankings, really. And I was with you and a lot of us, I think, when you don't captain the right player, especially Haaland. I think game week 9, maybe, when he got the 23 points, and instead I captained Mo Salah, who only had 5, so I got 10 instead of having obviously 46. Makes the big difference, but there's plenty of games to go, plenty of points to take, as long as you're consistent in what you were doing and you know, you do the right things. But this is why this time is even more important than a normal usual season, because you've got another chance now for similar to a wild card, really. And if you play well, when Boxing Day happens and then the festive fixtures and et cetera, then you can rock up very, very quickly at the turn of the year. So yeah, that's a very important moment.
Yeah, it does feel like a really exciting opportunity for managers. I certainly feel like that at the moment. I fell out of the top 500,000 this game week and I was absolutely gutted. And then I just thought, hold on, it's almost like a fresh start. And that's how Premier League teams will be seeing it, Sam. And that's how we have to view it, isn't it?
With the price rises frozen, suddenly we're in a place where you don't have to panic about transfers. You know, I spend half my wildcard bringing players in and then taking them out later in the week to try to boost my team value and bring in overall rank, which means that I don't actually start necessarily thinking about the players I definitely want until the end of my wildcard week. Whereas going into this period, I'm literally sitting here thinking, well, I'd like this one and this one and this one. And I don't have to think about any of the other stuff that comes with that. I can just focus in on these are the players I think I want for game week 17. And then over the period of the next few weeks, as the World Cup plays out, I'll be bringing players in or taking them out based upon injuries, based upon, as Jules said, confidence, fitness levels, but also the guys that have stayed behind and what we're seeing coming out of the clubs in terms of their warm weather training and that kind of stuff. So it's going to be a fascinating period for FPL managers to really dig into their FPL teams.
The free unlimited transfers now is Christmas come early, a bit like your Christmas tree, Kelly.
It is. I mean, it's appropriate that she's got it up really, Jules, isn't it? Because it is like a little Christmas present.
I don't need any presents under that tree. I just need a few empty boxes with plenty of FPL points, that's for sure.
Don't we all do?
I'm getting a bit deep and meaningful here, but if you could take one lesson that you have learned or one thing that you almost want to take from this first half of the season into this second half, what would it be? Maybe don't sell Wilf Zaha?
Oh, although I did miss a penalty in game week 16, so I felt better about my life choices. I think for me, it's been the change of system that has been a big learning point for me. Normally, I go really heavy in on my defenders this time around and I sacrifice my forward slots. This time it's been all in on the forwards. And that actually for me has worked really well. Having Haaland and Kane and then for most of the season, Jesus up top along with them. That has been a fantastic front three for me. And it's taught me quite a lot about how the game has changed this season in terms of where the points have been coming from.
What about you, Jules?
Yes, for the regular listeners, they know my struggles with captaincy, of course. And, you know, my love and hate relationship with Erling Haaland on the captaincy that I've regretted so many times. Not to give him the armband, try to be smart, of course. And it worked once, I think, but most of the time it didn't work. So I've said it before on the show. I would always captain him now because I'm just too scared that the one game that he scores 4 goals, which is going to be soon again, then he won't be my captain and I'd be gutted.
My resolution is just to remember to check my captaincy. Anyway, before we move on to specific teams, players, positions and the like, Jules and I will obviously have a real heavy eye on the World Cup, Sam, but how much do we have to consider players that are left at home and players that are at the World Cup, and how much can the World Cup guide our thinking? Because also we have to consider that some teams will go the distance, some players who are going to the World Cup might not be out there for very long.
Absolutely. And these things are so important, right? So we've got to be looking at the distance they go in the World Cup. So players that come out in the group stages, they're still going to get a really nice rest ahead of that Boxing Day deadline. Players that make it all the way to the semis, the final, the third, fourth playoff, they're going all the way in this competition pretty much, give or take. And that means they're coming back very late. It means they're not joining up with their teams for this kind of pre-season, pre-second half of the season training period there. The ones with the new managers aren't getting a lot of time with those. So all of that is good to consider. Then you've got the players that are left behind. And, you know, when you look at teams like Liverpool, they've got a lot of their good players left behind this World Cup, plus a couple that should come back from injury in this period. So they're going to have a nice period of time where they can all work together, build on tactics and strategies for this second part of the season. So it's really important to keep abreast of what's happening in Qatar at the World Cup, but also focus in on what we're hearing from the clubs and what we're seeing from the club's social media on what's happening in their training camps in this gap between game week 16 and game week 17.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the second week of December, when clubs are seemingly going away on these mini pre-season drills, we could learn a lot in terms of looking at which players are out there training, which teams are looking good. I'm going to be scouring social media, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for people to get an idea, every single club pretty much is going to go back to training at the beginning of December. So players have a good 2 to 3 weeks, the one who don't go to the World Cup, have a good 2 to 3 weeks off now where they can do whatever they want. They will have a fitness program to follow every day on their own, but they can go on holidays, they can spend time, stay where they are or whatever. But this is a good time. And then obviously starts of December, it's like a mini preseason again. And then the ones at the World Cup are going to join slowly whenever they get knocked out. They will have a few days off in between the end of their World Cup adventure and joining up with the rest of their club squad. But still, this is very, very significant. If you imagine it like a top star, not the French ones, but maybe England, I don't know, coming home early, of course, and then having a bit of time to prepare for the return of the Premier League.
One other thing as well, actually, Jules, there's League Cup action, isn't there, straight after the World Cup final. So potentially we could use that as another opportunity to see which players
exactly
are used most, which players are missing. Maybe they've picked up injuries. That's another opportunity to see players before the deadline.
Yeah, completely. Keep an eye on. I know it's not the Premier League itself, but it's still very important to see who plays in that League Cup round, who doesn't, who starts, who is not. To go back to the formation that Sam was talking for her FPL team, but also Nathan Jones at Southampton, Unai Emery, Julen Lopetegui at Wolves might change the formation of their teams, might change players in different positions. And that will be the first time that we see that the new teams for the new managers, for example. So just keep an eye very, very closely on that round of League Cup fixtures to get even more ready for the return of the Premier League.
Convenient there that you mentioned Nathan Jones at Southampton, because we're going to take a look at the FDR next. And over the next five games, Saints are actually on top, followed by West Ham, Spurs, Palace and Newcastle. So those are the teams with the best fixtures upon the return, Sam. Which ones of those stand out to you?
Wow. I mean, I think there's some really good teams in there, isn't there, that have been on fantastic form, you know, particularly Newcastle. They've been so good. And I think we were all expecting Newcastle to bounce back massively from what happened to them last season. You know, when Eddie Howe was appointed, the change in that team was phenomenal. And I was expecting them to have a good season this year, but they have bought it. You know, they're straight away, they've been on it. And, you know, to go into this break in the top four above teams like Liverpool, like Spurs, like Chelsea, it is a phenomenal achievement for Eddie Howe, given what he spent in the summer wasn't actually that much. So I'm really interested in keeping an eye on them. I've only got two Newcastle players in my current team, and I definitely feel like I want to have three of them when we come back. And Southampton, for me, are a really, really interesting team. The change in manager is always really positive, or nearly always really positive for the clubs. You get that bounce, you get that kind of excitement from the players that they want to impress the new manager. And for me, that's something that I always like to get in on if I can. And with Southampton, they're lovely and cheap, so you don't have to worry about budgeting for them necessarily. And players like James Ward-Prowse, like Shea Adams, maybe like one of the defenders at the back, they could all offer great value for money. So I'm going to be keeping a close eye on what we're hearing from Southampton as Nathan Jones gets himself comfortable in dealing with his new squad.
Newcastle are up there in terms of fixtures. They've also had the form, but Jules, can they maintain it? Arguably, they're one of the teams that probably really didn't want this break to come.
Yeah. Although I guess you welcome the break and just hope that you can pick up where you left it before the World Cup. They will have a few players going to Qatar, of course. Maybe not as many as other top clubs in England or in Europe, but still quite significant. But I think Eddie Howe has something so positive in place, so good going forward now, that dynamic is so positive, that I think you have to be confident that when the league resumes and when those games resume, they've got Leicester, Leeds, then the big clash with Arsenal, of course, that they yet to play against, and then Fulham and Palace. So those five games, you can easily see, again, we go back to the same names, but Almiron, who is going to enjoy his holidays back in Paraguay, Trippier, who obviously is going away with England. Callum Wilson, same things. But then you could look at Nick Pope as well, but also Sven Botman, also Dan Burn, all those kind of players, Bruno Guimaraes, Joelinton, all of them. that have been really, really good. Joe Willock, of course, who was so good for them in the last few weeks before the break. Very, very important going forward. I think, again, you know, we've never really said in a game, let's get loaded on Newcastle players before, but this could be the season really where you could easily get two or three in your team and be really, really good.
You say they're two or three. Do we have to triple up now, do you think?
I think that's how good they are this season, really. Yeah, and when you think that they've played, well, when you look at the fixtures, okay, there's the Arsenal game, which is going to be tricky to sort of navigate around if you've tripled up on Newcastle players. But you can easily see Pope, Trippier and Callum Wilson in your team, or Pope, Trippier, Almiron. That's a hell of a three to get from them and get your points as well. So yeah, I think double up for sure, probably, and triple up if you feel like it, yeah.
Newcastle are an interesting case in point, Sam, because they've got the fixtures and the form to back it up. But when we're looking ahead at fixtures, we can't really ignore the teams that have been in form that maybe aren't top of the FDR at the moment, the likes of your Arsenals, your Manchester Cities and so on.
Yeah, because these are not clubs that, you know, have got terrible fixtures. They've got good fixtures. They're just not quite as good as maybe the likes of Southampton's and Newcastle's fixtures. But, you know, when you look at the way that Manchester City have been playing, particularly the way that Arsenal have been playing in these opening 16 game weeks of the season, these are not teams you want to de-invest in. They're teams that you want to stick with. This is maybe the opportunity to swap which of the players you have from each of the teams, because often managers want to avoid that kind of sideways move from one Man City player to another, or from one Arsenal player to another. So this is the good moment for doing that. You know, as somebody that's trebled up on the Arsenal attack, I keep looking longingly at the Arsenal defence, thinking, I really wish I owned a Gabriel, a Saliba, a Ben White, and haven't been able to have them because my three Arsenal players have already been locked in. So this is a moment where I can now make those switches and make those decisions, but I definitely wouldn't be de-investing in clubs like Man City and Arsenal.
Okay, let's talk a bit about team structure then. We all went big at the back, didn't we? Last year we struggled with forwards. Does it feel like, Sam, there's been a little bit of a shift?
Absolutely. I think, you know, in seasons gone by, and for many seasons gone by now, the defence has been the key, hasn't it? You know, we've had to have the likes of Cancelo. We've had to have the likes of Trent Alexander-Arnold, and you probably wanted Andy Robertson in there as well. So you were going really hard and really heavy on the defence. And, you know, maybe you chucked in a Rudiger or a Reece James from Chelsea as well. And you played your four big hitting defenders every single week. Well, this year, we haven't had that so much, because the Liverpool boys haven't been keeping clean sheets, so they've been off the radar. The Chelsea defence has been either injured or not keeping clean sheets for 99% of this season so far, so you've not been going there. And Cancelo, well, we all know how Jules feels about Cancelo and his number 7 shirt, but for the rest of us, you know, we've invested in him because of his pedigree and what we've seen in the past, but we haven't seen the attacking returns. And it's been the slightly cheaper defenders that we've wanted to invest in. So for me, there has been a shift, and there's been a shift towards wanting to put more money into those attacking slots and particularly use those three forwards to our advantage.
Remember at the beginning of the season, if we can cast our mind back to when we did those pre-season podcasts, the big debate felt like, do we need the threemium? Do we need your Erling Haaland, your Harry Kane, your Mo Salah? Now we are 16 game weeks in, Jules, during this break. How do you reflect on that? Do you need all three of those? Is two enough? And which two?
Yeah, I think two is enough, because Mo Salah, even if the form picked up, of course, and in the end still has a decent amount of points in the game, nowhere near obviously as good as what we saw in previous season, which was maybe not sustainable anyway for him to stay that long at that kind of level. But I think Kane in a team that is struggling collectively to create chances for him, I think he could easily have more goals had Kulusevski been fit the whole season, for example, and that kind of stuff. But Kane and Haaland for me are the two that really you can't do without, because Kane will always score even if he's just got one chance in the game. And Haaland is a machine, even if, of course, the Brentford game didn't go according to a lot of plans. But still, I think for me, if you have to pick two of those three, I mean, you might just have enough money for one and that's fine. But if you have two out of those three, then I think Kane and Haaland really are must have.
And I also think, Jules, with players like Salah, you could potentially go for Nunes instead and therefore save a little bit of money on that threemium. Because for me, Darwin feels like he should be a premium forward in the game, but he hasn't quite got that premium price tag that Haaland and Kane do. So there are some potential players that you could kind of go to instead. I guess it's the same with KDB in the middle. If you don't want to go up to KDB, you've got other options in the likes of Foden that you could maybe go to instead. So for me, that's how I look at it. I can't really get all three of those forward players in my team. So I try to look for, is there other options at that club who potentially offer me some slightly better value for money?
Yeah, I should also tell you that Haaland is the top scorer on 123 points, but only one return in the last three. What on earth is he doing? Kane is then second top scorer behind him. He's got 12 goals this season. Salah is seventh top scorer with just 6 goals, and he is still 12.8 million. So in terms of kind of value, Sam, that kind of does reflect that Haaland and Kane are out there ahead of Salah at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Those two have been sort of playing their own game, really, in terms of their points for the season so far. They're the only two that have gone over the 100-point mark in these opening 16 game weeks of the season, and they've been so reliable. The thing for me with Salah is we've had some real highs, like when he got his brace against Spurs, and then we've had some real lows where you would have expected him to return and he just didn't, like in the game against Bournemouth, for example, when Liverpool scored 9 and we got nothing out of him. I think for me, you know, you have to take the highs and the lows with FPL, and Salah is a fantastic player. He's not going to the World Cup, so he's going to have a nice break now, and then he's going to go into this pre-season camp with Liverpool. And a lot of his Liverpool team aren't going to the World Cup with him, so he's going to have a lot of his friends staying behind where they can practice strategy. So he will be a good asset, I think, going through into game week 17. But the question is, do you want to spend that budget? And are there other Liverpool players maybe you can save a little bit of money on by investing in them instead?
Okay, let's go through positionally elsewhere then, because a lot of people might be starting from scratch. A word on that though as well, Jules, because if you are going to start from scratch and sell all of your players, you've got to be careful in terms of the value that you might have in them. I've got a couple of players in my team at the moment that I don't know if I'm going to want come December the 26th. I probably don't, but I might want them, and then I might have to buy them back at a bigger price. That's something to be wary of, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Because as we said before, prices are not going to go up or down. However, the value of the player that it is now stays the same. So if someone has risen up like in the last few weeks, the value will stay that. You might think, okay, I can have him in my team, but now he's worth 12.5 million or whatever. Where was he started the season at 11.5? So make sure when you do your team and you replace the players with all that free and limited transfers, that you keep that in mind to build it, because otherwise you might come up short. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, you have Haaland, he costs you more money now if you sell him and buy him back. So just make sure you keep abreast of that, like George says.
Okay, let's go through positionally then, starting with goalkeepers. Who's the best keeper for these games? And Sam, firstly, you went big at the start of the season with Edison, but in terms of the top scorers, it's the cheaper goalkeepers that lead the way. Nick Pope and Dean Henderson are on top at the moment.
Yeah, and there's been such good value, hasn't there, in the goalkeeper slots. Normally, I like a set of rotating goalkeepers because it gives us the potential to play the fixtures. And for me as an FPL manager, that's something that I really love, is playing out the fixtures. And Kepa at Chelsea and Danny Ward at Leicester, they rotate so nicely after we come back after the break. So if Kepa's available for Chelsea come game week 17, having them as a rotating pair is nice. If you do want to invest in one of the premiums, then it's probably Lloris that has arguably the nicest fixtures. But my goodness, he's got 8 goalies in the game that have scored more points than him so far. And Spurs just haven't really been keeping that tight defensive unit. Now, maybe when Ramiro's back and things look more solid, that might be a better option. But I think you're right, Kelly. Right now, I don't think you go with a premium goalkeeper. I think you pick either somebody in that mid-price bracket, or you go right down to Danny Ward and you just say, Danny Ward, you know what? You have earned your spot as most FPL managers' first choice goalkeeper, because after what was a terrible start to the season for Danny Ward, where all FPL managers questioned their decisions in the early part of the season. I mean, Kelly, I remember you having both the Leicester goalkeepers, didn't you, in the start of the season? And if you'd have kept with that till now, actually it would have come good for you by the second part of the first part of the season.
I feel like I need to make a confession at this point. I've still got Danny Ward, but at the last minute, just before the deadline, because I had 2 free transfers and I didn't know what to do with my second one, I thought, I've got Kepa, he's injured. Danny Ward's playing away from home at West Ham. I'm going to bench Danny Ward.
Oh,
11
no.
points. I bought in Alisson, who conceded pretty early on Saturday. I wasn't working this weekend. I took the weekend off, and just witnessing that Liverpool clean sheet go and then seeing Danny Ward get 3 bonus points. as much as we all bought him in at the beginning of the season, just because Leicester had sold a keeper and he was a cheap option that was guaranteed to start, he's really come into form, hasn't he, Jules? And now he's a really good option in FPL. 6 points over his opening five game weeks, 37 over the last five.
Yeah, really impressive. I have to be honest, I didn't really believe that he could, you know, turn his fortune that way. But he's been impressive defensively. They've been much better. They've been much better overall anyway in the last few game weeks compared to the shocking start of the season, of course, that they had and all those defeats. So again, I think it's one to keep an eye on for when the season starts again.
Who's your top goalkeeper going into this? I note that Aaron Ramsdale isn't in the top five keepers at the moment, Jules.
He's not far. I think he's seventh, maybe eighth. I mean, he's my brother from another mother, of course. So I've got to keep him in the team. But I would mention Jose Sa, one, because he's done really well so far, 61 points in a team that is obviously struggling. But I think Lopetegui coming to Wolves, which is a really good appointment, of course. He's a top manager. Will help them being more solid even, and Jose Sa being so good on his line, being so good so far this season, even again in difficult times. I think a 5.9% of ownership could be a very interesting differential as well. So again, keep that in mind, because I think he's fifth in terms of best goalkeeper so far in terms of points. But Lopetegui will make that team much more solid than what he's been so far. So I think Sa could really play a big part in a much better second half of the season for Wolves than the first one half.
Okay, and Ramsdale, Jules, is actually eighth overall.
All right.
However,
all right.
Defensively, Arsenal have been very good. In terms of the top scoring defenders in the top five, two Arsenal players behind Kieran Trippier. Incidentally, by the way, Newcastle have the top scorers in the goalkeeper, defence and midfield position. Shows just how well they're doing. But after Kieran Trippier is William Saliba and Gabriel. They've been good defensively, haven't they? Even with your biased Arsenal glasses on. For us neutrals, they've been pretty good.
They have been amazing. And I mean, I have to brag here. That I don't do often, of course. But William Saliba, I told you at the start of the season, I told people that he would have a big impact. I never thought, and neither did he, to be fair, that it would be that great, that amazing. Like, it looks like Beckenbauer. But this is, it's been amazing. And I think if you got on the early, super early Saliba bandwagon, you'll be very happy, because he still only cost you 5.3 million. And yet he got you 74 points. He scored goals. He obviously kept clean sheets for Arsenal when they did. And they didn't do that much. But still, I think his attacking return as well has been fantastic. They're so good on set pieces, same for Gabriel. So yeah, those two have been some of the revelations, I think, of the season and in the game as well. So well done to William, because it's not easy to come over. He's still such a young player, such an inexperienced in a way. And to come and have that kind of impact on the Premier League is really impressive.
Will you be bringing in Arsenal defenders, Sam? Because you mentioned that's been one of your frustrations in the early part of the campaign.
Yeah, it's been a real difficult watch for me whenever I'm watching Arsenal at the moment, because they look like they're going to keep clean sheets, and they're one of the only sides that look like they're going to keep clean sheets. But not only do they look like they're getting those, the defenders have got so much attacking threat. You know, we've seen that from all of them so far this season, and this is maybe why I don't like the Ramsdale pick quite as much this season, because the defenders in the Arsenal team look just as likely to keep a clean sheet as they do to get attacking returns. So you could end up with absolutely huge double-digit hauls out of them. And the likes of Saliba, the likes of Gabriel, the likes of Ben White too, who for me has improved so much in the last couple of weeks and has really earned that England call-up for the World Cup squad. I really like them and I want to invest in them. So it's then just deciding which of my Arsenal forward players I sacrifice to have them in. But coming into game week 17, I'm 100% having an Arsenal defender in there.
Ben White is 0.5 or 0.6 cheaper than Saliba and Gabriel, Jules. Who's the best option? Do we just need one Arsenal defender? Because obviously we can only have three Arsenal players in our team, and we'll also still want to have their attackers, I presume.
Yeah, maybe just one. And then you pick, I guess, really, if you look into it, Saliba and Gabriel seems to be in all the set piece routine that we see so far, that we've seen so far this season, and
yeah,
the great work. They've got a French set piece coach, so it's no wonder they're that amazing. No. Of course, Nicolas Jovert, shout out, big shout out. But yeah, I think maybe more, I agree with Sam. I think Ben White has been incredible, but he's not, I don't think, at the heart of all the set piece routine like Gabriel and Saliba are, who are clearly the target there. So I think just for that, maybe I would go down more to the Saliba or Gabriel route than the Ben White, but really just about.
The fourth top scorer defensively, Sam, is our friend, not Jules's, João Cancelo. Is he still essential for many of us, not Jules? He was one of the first names on our team sheet.
And he will still be one of the first names on my team sheet coming back after the World Cup. You know, he still has more touches in the final third than any other defender so far this season. Yes, he isn't necessarily getting the levels of XG and XGI, expected goal involvements, that we would have hoped for with him given his price tag. However, I think he's so fundamental in the way that the Man City team is structured and the way that they play and the movement that he creates in that team. So I will keep him. I think it's important that when I'm structuring my team coming out of the World Cup, that I keep a premium in every position, because that way there's a lot of flexibility to move around, because I don't think I'm going to have a Liverpool defender in there going into game week 17, because I'm just not seeing enough from them in terms of their potential yet. So I want to have somebody in there that keeps enough budget that it's easy to swap around between those premium defenders. And for me, the best premium defender in the game still is Cancelo.
Jules, what about you? Any change in your stance, or are you remaining stubborn?
Is he taking the number 17 or maybe just the number 3 or 2 like every normal fullback in the history?
It.
Yeah, okay. So
it's a mid-season break, not a new season.
That's true. I'll pass.
Okay, so a lot of managers will probably go for Cancelo, an Arsenal defender, and I'm presuming Kieran Trippier. That's a bit of a no-brainer, isn't it, Jules?
Yeah, completely. I think that's, if you can do Cancelo, Saliba, let's say, and Trippier, and then still have, you know, defenders on your bench that are good, that can come on, like, I don't know, Diogo Dalot, for example, who we mentioned before, has been really good, and maybe another cheaper option, then I think you really set. Your five defenders are very good. If you have a good backup goalkeeper as well, you're set there defensively at least.
A little shout out for Aaron Creswell at this point. Could be a really interesting pick. West Ham fixtures are nice. He's taken 32 corners so far this season. Only three defenders have taken more than that. He's also supplied 6 free kicks, of which 4 of them have been successful. So actually, we've got some good set piece threat there from Creswell. Now, he hasn't lived up to the hype of Trippier, but his price point, and with the West Ham fixtures the way they are after the break, maybe is a nice option in that defensive line.
And also quickly for Andy Robertson, who obviously finished very strongly before the break with those 2 assists, only owned by 4.9%, which is I think logical considering the sort of shaky form, a little bit like all the Liverpool defenders before. But I think again, he's not going to go to the World Cup, so he's going to have a good rest, get ready for the start of the Premier League. So I'd be very tempted to bring him in.
That worries me that you're tempted to bring him in. He's one of the transfers I did make on Saturday before the final lot of price rises, purely because I thought that his price was going to go up. And I thought he's someone that potentially I could want. I'd rather get him now at his lower price.
Well.
And if I want to sell him before Boxing Day, I can. And now I'm definitely going to be selling him. Let's move into midfield. Can you believe, again, the top scorer is Miguel Almiron? Can he sustain it, Sam, just like Newcastle? I've not bought him in all this time because I'm like, surely this week is where it changes. But it's just not.
Kelly, honestly, he's a dream to own right now. Like, you bring him in, he looks like he wants to score every 5 minutes. He even got an assist. I mean, I don't think he really wanted to get an assist
definitely
in game week 16. He definitely wanted to score the goal himself, but nonetheless, he got me an assist. Look, is it sustainable? I don't know, is the honest answer, because we've had 5 seasons now of Almiron in the Premier League and we have not seen this from him so far. But this season, there does seem to be a change. But it's changing Newcastle generally, right? They're a lot better. They're a lot more attacking. Eddie Howe's got them playing a great system. Is it a purple patch? Yes, maybe. Can that purple patch be sustained after the World Cup as well? Let's see. I am personally going to have him going into game week 17 because if for any reason he doesn't come back full of the joys of spring, well rested and ready to go again, which is, by the way, what I'm expecting from him. But if he doesn't come back like that, there's other players you can easily move to in that midfielder slot. I think Almiron, I'm going to say, is borderline essential actually going into game week 17. Fixtures are great for Newcastle. The form is fantastic. They're on the up. They're going to make Champions League football this season, I think.
Oh, bold statement there. Who's going to miss out? Spurs, maybe? That's a discussion for another podcast, I feel. Okay, so Almiron as well is only 5.8 million and providing that sort of value, a top scorer at this stage, that price is just remarkable, isn't it? We've already discussed Mo Salah. I know neither of you two are particularly sold on him. Who else is going to be making it into your midfield, Jules?
So Almiron is there, but I think the big one for me, I can't have KDB. I would love to, but financially, because I already have Haaland and Kane, it's difficult. I think it's Kulusevski, and we mentioned him before, and Sam loves him, of course, and he spent most of that first half of the season injured, unfortunately for him and for Spurs. But now that he's back, and already you saw as soon as he was back, that Liverpool game where Sam and I were, what an impact he had on the team. Then, of course, the Leeds game, even more, even better. And I think Kulusevski, because he's the low ownership as well, 4.6%, is not just an amazing differential. Really, that shouldn't be a differential at this stage of the season, but still is because of the injury. And still, I think at 8 million, a really decent price for what he's going to bring. He's going to bring so much to your game and to Spurs' game.
Well, Sam, I know you're going to be part of the Kulusevski fan club. I imagine he's joining Almiron in your midfield. Who else is?
Well, I'm keeping a very, very close eye on Luis Diaz's return from injury, because he is due back in game week 17. And in the early part of the season, for me, he was a fantastic pick. I like the Liverpool fixtures. I think that Klopp having this time with his team will really help. And like Jules said, affording another premium when you've already got Kane and Haaland in your team is difficult. So getting to Salah is going to be hard. So I'm going to be looking at players like Nunes, but also like Luis Diaz, because I would really like to go back there again. I wouldn't have sold him before if it wasn't for his injury. So Luis Diaz, for me, is one that's definitely on my radar over this period.
I almost don't want to ask this, but are you going to persist with Phil Foden?
It's really tough, this one, actually, because, you know, came in on wildcard, I was expecting huge things, absolutely huge things. I was thinking, here we go, Phil Foden's going to return me 100 points on his own in the next 4 weeks because the fixtures were so great. Those three benchings have really kind of changed my opinion on whether he's safe to own in FPL, because at that budget, you know, we just talked about Luis Diaz and Kulusevski and Almiron, all cheaper than Phil Foden, or give or take. So I would prefer, I think, to have those three than I would Foden, which feels difficult and scary given the only other way to invest in the Man City midfield and know that you're going to get starts is to go KDB, and I can't afford him. So I'm not sure. Foden is definitely on the you might leave my team list.
Well, a lot of that depends on how far England go as well and how many minutes he plays.
Yeah, you're right, Kelly. We see, but there's a reason why Pep Guardiola benches you three games in a row in the Premier League, especially when you're already through in the Champions League. So it was not to get rested for the Champions League. And I agree with everything Sam said. I also brought him in and I was disappointed.
Disappointed. And it sounds like he's not going to make either of your new squads. Any other midfield shouts, Sam?
Little differential shout out to James Ward-Prowse at Southampton. We've talked
always
going to
be rested, isn't he? Mm.
Going to be rested. He's second for successful corners amongst midfielders in the game right now between game week 1 and game week 16. He's also top for successful free kicks amongst the midfielders in the game. Put in 17 crosses so far, more than any other midfielder, including KDB. So I think he could be a really nice differential. And if you've got budget issues because you're trying to afford Haaland and Kane and Salah and everyone else, nice and cheap.
And Crescencio Somerville as well at Leeds. Incredible, really, when you think about it. I mean, he's owned by 1.2% of the managers.
Yeah.
Returned in the last four games, 7 points, 13 points, 7 points, 6 points as well for Leeds. Again, he's going to be rested. I don't know if, again, the purple patch that we mentioned for Almiron can continue for Somerville as well, but he brings so much pace, so much energy, so much intensity to a Leeds team that is all about that. So maybe just a name to keep on. And he's so cheap, 4.4 million. You can easily have him in your team, leave him on the bench, or maybe even start him and see how he goes.
Yeah, Jules mentioned there, Somerville's 4.4 million. Ward-Prowse, a little bit more at 6.2. Before we move on to the forwards, we can't talk about the midfielders and we can't give Almiron praise for his exceptional value for money without mentioning Andreas Pereira, can we, Sam? What a start to the season. I think we can all hold our hands up and say we just brought him in because he was going to be a regular playing cheap midfielder, but he's been a regular playing points filling, often punishing if you've left him on your bench midfielder.
That's the only problem, isn't it, with Andreas Pereira, is that we've built these squads this year without so many premium defenders, which has meant the front eight have all been players that you want to play. And I put Pereira in that bracket of players that you want to play. But because he's the cheapest, he often is the one that ends up getting sacrificed to the bench. And then every week I look at my bench and go, oh no, what have I done? There's Pereira sitting there punishing me week upon week like he did against Manchester City. Phenomenal season he's had so far. I did think that without Mitrovic in game week 16, Fulham didn't look quite as good, and that meant that Pereira didn't look quite as good. However, when Mitrovic is there and those two are playing together with his set piece threat as well, what is not to love about Andreas Pereira?
Okay, so no question marks over Andreas Pereira, and certainly, guys, I'm guessing no question marks over Erling Haaland. We have to have him, don't we?
100%.
Yeah, we do. I even think our 12.2 million is cheap for what he brings to, you know, no brainer.
Yeah, remarkable. Yeah. Goals, goals, goals. So the question is, who joins him in your three forward spots? Gabriel Jesus was so, so popular at the start of the season. Still is. His form has tailed off a little bit. I guess we should keep a close eye on what he does at the World Cup.
Yeah, we should, and see in that incredible Brazil attacking line how much he plays, where he plays, and how well he does or not. If only he would get points in the game for all his activity, recovering the ball in his own box, all that stuff that he does, second assist and everything, he would be higher up in terms of the points that he's brought so far. But there's still a few chances missed. He could have had more goals, of course, more assists too. It's still, I think, a player to keep in mind. I wouldn't be surprised if people sell him to try to bring someone who's more of a lethal goal scorer, if you want, or just more of a goal scorer, pure goal scorer, full stop. But I think Gabriel Jesus still has some value in the game for what he brings and how important he is and central to what Arsenal do.
Keeping him, Sam?
Don't know. I think it will be depending on how far he goes in the World Cup, how far Saka goes in the World Cup, and of course Martinelli will go the same distance as Gabriel Jesus. So I've got those three. One of them has to make way for my Arsenal defender. At the moment, I'm erring on the side of it being Jesus because I fancy having Darwin Nunes for Liverpool in that third forward spot. So I think it will be Jesus that makes well. But if he has a phenomenal World Cup, then I might have to kind of reevaluate my decision. So I'm holding him for now, but he'd probably be Darwin Nunes by the end of the unlimited transfer window.
You said there about your third spot, so I'm presuming it's Haaland, either Jesus or Nunes. Who's the third one?
Oh, of course it's Harry Kane. My beloved Harry Kane.
Your boyfriend.
I asked some stupid questions on this podcast, but that's probably the most stupid I've asked and will ask all season.
The thing is, I think even this season, even as a non-biased Harry Kane loving person that I am, he is the second highest scoring player in the game. Over 100 points scored so far. And, you know, we're all waxing lyrical about Erling Haaland. If Erling Haaland wasn't here this season, everybody would own Harry Kane. He'd be very, very highly owned in the game. As it is, he's actually a bit of a differential. I mean, he doesn't count as a differential in the under 10% category. But every week, his impact on my rank is positive because not a lot of people own him. I'm really enjoying owning him. He looks like if Spurs are going to score, he's going to be part of it, as always. So Kane and Haaland, non-negotiables for me.
What about you, Jules? I know you're a fan of Haaland and Kane, so you'll be keeping those. But who's your third forward going to be?
So I like Darwin, of course. And we mentioned before that he was really improving, that he was getting very close to be amazing. And I think that newish position on the left-hand side suits him well. He suits Robertson, by the way, too. And Bobby Firmino as well. Maybe not so much Mo Salah, but I think they've combined well. We saw that against Spurs. And I think he's on a roll now. Again, let's have a look at Uruguay at the World Cup and see how well he does, how much he plays, all of that. But I think it's a very interesting one. I have to mention one of my boys in Anthony Martial because I brought him in for game week 16. He could easily have had two goals against Fulham. I thought he played really well. He was a little bit unlucky, maybe just not as sharp because he hasn't played much because of the injuries that he had. But Ten Hag loves him. He loves Ten Hag. I think he will be so good in that team that he's only owned by 1.9% of the managers. So I think, again, keep him in mind. You've got plenty of time to make a decision. He's not going with France at the World Cup, so he'll be rested. And he will have a lot of time to make sure that he's fully fit, ready to go again on Boxing Day. And all the work that he's going to do with Ten Hag in that break, I think, could be very beneficial. So I think Martial is really one to keep an eye on again.
But you know, Kelly, it's really hard, isn't it? Because the three forward spots feel so precious this year and I could fill them 10 times over. Like, there's so many forwards going into game week 17 that I think I'd quite like, depending upon how far England go in the World Cup. There's Callum Wilson, if he comes back uninjured with the Newcastle fixtures the way they are. He looks nice. You've got a Skamaker at West Ham. Lovely fixtures there. You could definitely invest.
Ivan Tony.
Mitrovic and Tony have been great this season. They've been so good, Jules, haven't they? Mm. You could have them. You've got Shea Adams. If Southampton massively possibly pick up. You've got him that you could invest in. So many nice budget friendly forward picks that it does feel a little bit wrong of me to sit here and say, well, I'm just going to have Haaland, Kane and Darwin and spend the most money possible on the front line. But it's tough not to, because I think all three of them offer good value for money. It's just that I would rather have five forward slots this year and have a couple more in there too.
I was going to say, we don't want that third forward spot to be kind of wasted on a budget non-playing bench forward these days, do we? We're playing three forwards, aren't we?
Every week. Every week is so important.
Okay, well, that concludes the positional chat and this podcast. If you want to get your team set early, do remember the next FPL deadline is very far away. It's on the 26th of December. Plenty of planning and sourcing of our teams to do before then. In the meantime, we will be back with you on a few occasions, not every single Thursday, of course, but both Off the Bench and the FPL pod will be back intermittently. So do make sure you're subscribed to us on wherever you get your podcast from so you don't miss out on anything. Sam, what are you going to be doing over the next few weeks? How does your schedule look? I imagine watching plenty of football from back home.
I will be watching plenty of football and I will be happily tinkering away with my FPL team. Probably my football screenshots in my phone will grow dramatically, I suspect, over the next few weeks, a bit like they do in pre-season. And I'll have about 12 teams to talk to you about the next time we come on.
Yeah, I'll be intrigued to see just how much of our plans have changed the next time we meet up virtually, of course, in a few weeks for the pod. Jules, when are you heading out to Qatar and how are you going to balance everything? And of course, you're going to be following France, so I'm probably going to see you at some point.
Yeah, I'll see you when France knock out England in the quarterfinals, of course, Kelly. We'll be together there. I'll fly on Wednesday, so just the day after you. And yeah, we see how that World Cup goes. We're going to, again, check the form of all our Premier League players and everybody. And we wish everybody the best for that World Cup, of course.
Yeah, we do indeed. Well, Jules, we wish you the best. I kind of wish France the best until they meet England or if they meet Wales, of course, as well. Sam, enjoy your break as well. We'll be back very soon. So like I said, do keep subscribed. And of course, don't forget, Premier League may be on a break, but FPL never stops. Bye-bye.